As usual, The Castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
This week, ladies and gentlemen, our castaway is a writer, the author of Tarker the Otter and many other books, Henry Williamson. Mr. Williamson, is music an interest of yours?
A very great interest. It's part of my life.
Have you any musical skill yourself?
No, but when I was a boy, I could play what was called a flageolet. And I could just imitate the cuckoo on it.
Do you listen to records a lot?
Quite a lot, yes.
Did you have any plan in selecting this 8 discs that may have to last the rest of your life?
Yes, I... emotionally, you see. I think one's real life is the emotional life. What one really feels and thinks and is. And these records mean a very great deal to me.
What's the first one?
It's a song written by Delius called Sonara, or Kinnara, as somebody calls it.
John Shirley Quirk singing part of Delius's setting of Cinera, which is what Mr. Shirley Quirk calls her. What's your second record?
Vaughan Williams is a variation on a theme by Thomas Tallis.
Yes.
Thomas Tallis was, either an Elizabethan or a Jacobean organist. And this variation by Vaughan Williams is a masterpiece. And it made him famous, and by heaven, It makes everybody who has any feeling for music sort of grand and glorious.
John Barbirolli conducting part of the Vaughan Williams Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis. Now, Mr. Williamson, I know you've lived for many years in North Devon. Were you born there?
No, I was born in Kent,
mm-hmm.
which became part of London. I spent a lot of my boyhood in Bedfordshire.
Yes.
And when I was 17, just before the war, I went down to Devon, which is my mother's country for many centuries, her forebears, and I felt at home.
Yes. Presumably your boyhood was sufficiently countrified for you to have become interested in natural history.
Well, I could ride on a bicycle about 2 miles from London, near Blackheath, and I was in fields where there were partridges and pheasants and cuckoos and trout in the River Ravensbourne in those days.
As a boy, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be a farmer.
In fact, what did you do when you left school?
I worked for a time in London in an office in Mincing Lane, which I enjoyed very much, from 10 till 4. And
well, they didn't overwork you.
Oh, no, not at all. And in fact, I really was nearly sacked several times because I would play pranks.
Mm.
Well, I joined the Territorials, and very shortly afterwards, the war came and we were mobilized.
Yes, you fought in the infantry right through the First World War.
Well, I was out in 1914,
yes.
And that's the end of the First Battle of Ypres. And, yes, I was in infantry, and I left the army in 1919, September.
You were one of the participants in the famous Christmas fraternization of 1914.
Yes, that was a really marvellous time. We had to go out on Christmas Eve and put in posts into frozen ground about 40 yards away from the enemy. And they didn't fire, and we were soon talking and laughing, and the next morning we went over and went right behind the lines. Somebody played a football match, and I was amazed because the Germans thought that they were on the right side. They were too polite to say we were on the wrong side, but, yes. But it was simply, we were, both felt the same sort of thing.
This was a practical lesson in the futility of war that must
Well, it, more than that, it altered my whole conception, because the propaganda against Germany at that time was pretty fearsome, and most of it was invented. I mean, it was atrocities and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, of course, when I became a writer, it taught me balance and to look at everything, as it were, from the inside.
Did you become a writer immediately when you would have mobilized?
I wrote during the war. I was back. It was my reserve regiment in 1918. I had finished the war in March 1918. And I was so unhappy in a way that I withdrew after mess dinner every night and wrote in my hut. And I locked the door, and I felt very nervous in case anybody should come and see I was writing.
And when you returned to England?
I went into Fleet Street. And for a brief 3 months, put there by Alfred Pemberton, who was a very good friend to me, and he said, Williamson, you're going to be a writer. And I became a writer.
How long did you live in London?
At that time, I think about the best part of a year. I used to go every night when I could to the gallery at Covent Garden and listen to Thomas Beecham's marvellous, you know, his operas and everything. And I saw Julian and Mignon, oh, everything.
Yes. And then what decided you to leave London?
Well, I thought I must go down to the country and write. And I found a cottage in North Devon for £5 a year. With two bedrooms in and a place downstairs.
Yes.
And I wrote for a newspaper, the Daily Express. The editor sent me 1.5 guineas a week, which was about £10 in those days, to write a very small snippet.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's break off here for your third record. What shall we have?
La Mer by Debussy.
Why do you choose that?
Well, it's so beautiful in itself. One can see the waves and the sand, and it's like a beautiful prose style to me. I am not technically a musician, but I can see that it's what they call bang on.
Ernest Ansemer conducting the Swiss Romande Orchestra in Debussy's La Mer. You rented this cottage in Devon for £5 a year. Afterwards, you built your own house, didn't you?
Well, I wrote a book about an otter, and it won a prize of £100. And I bought a 2-acre field on a hill with that. And later, I built an oak hut, rather solid. And it still stands today. And has an open hearth in it. And I go there and I write. And it's a most lovely place. Well, the trees are now very high. I planted them about 40 years ago.
Yes.
Wind belts.
Those animal books of yours, Tarka the Otter, Brock the Badger, Salar the Salmon, these have really become classics. They're always in print. Always loved.
Yeah, oh, yes, yes, they are.
Did you early establish a literary discipline? Do you work regular hours on your writing?
I try to. And when I do, I'm very happy. When I'm flowing, I just go on and on with tremendous exultation because I know it's coming.
Yes.
I don't regard myself as a person who's doing it. I'm not conceited. I'm just a medium.
A medium for what? For any particular...
No, for spiritual forces.
Yes.
spiritual clarity, the social instinct, if you like.
As well as writing, you've also been a farmer. You've achieved that boyhood ambition.
Well, after having some sort of fame, I found I was deteriorating, and I thought, I'm going to be a red-faced farmer and have no imagination at all and just join life by hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did.
Yes. Now, between the wars, your sympathies were non-conformist. There's a story that you and your friend T.E. Lawrence were planning an ex-serviceman's appeal to Hitler as a last attempt to stop the Second World War.
I feared that a war would come about, and I thought of writing to T. Lawrence and saying, will you come with me to Germany and meet Hitler? Because he admired Great Britain very much. Perhaps I wasn't wise enough to know that a man of that tremendous artistic feeling should never be in charge of a nation, because he was a perfectionist, and once you begin to force perfection on other people, you become the devil.
Mm-hmm. Now, this plan didn't come to anything.
It came to nothing, but it came to the death of Lawrence, because I had a telegram the next day to come and see him, wet or fine, at his cottage, and coming back from sending that telegram, he was killed on his motorbike.
Yes. Do you think that appeal to Hitler could have changed the destiny of Europe?
No, I don't think so, no. I think that all the conditions of Europe were bad, and the conditions for us were bad. And what I do feel most strongly is that no nation must damn another nation so much they must sort of see their own faults and then come together. It's so tragic when you see... Well, I mean, even Hitler said once, it must be recognized that in the most deadly quarrel, both sides can be right at the same time.
Let's have your fourth record.
Let me see now. That is Daphnis and Chloe,
yes,
by Ravel.
Of Ravel's second Daphnis and Chloe suite, conducted by Georges Poitre. You recently completed a major work, which is in effect one long novel in 15 volumes.
Yes, it's called A Chronicle of Ancient Sunlight. The original title was A Chronicle of Wasted Time from one of Shakespeare's sonnets, but the publisher said if you call it A Chronicle of Wasted Time, you'll get too many critics taking advantage of that.
This is a work that you planned, I believe, for many years before you started it.
30 years before I could start.
And how long did it take you to write?
From 1949 till this year.
Nearly, 20 years.
Yes.
This must be the longest single work in the English language.
Well, I think it probably is. It goes from 1892 to 1947.
Have you been able to start up again on anything else?
No, not yet, but I shall. I do want to write children's books.
Yeah.
Because I have a great sense of fun with children.
Well, you have a large family of your own.
Well, right? My grandchildren, I just love them.
Another record, please.
I think I would like Holst's Planets, and particularly the one called Mars. Because I heard that as a young man soon after the First War, and I thought, this man knows what it's like.
Thank you.
Sounds from Holst's Planet Suite, conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. Let's go straight on to your next record.
Stravinsky's Nightingale.
An excerpt from the opening of Stravinsky's The Nightingale, conducted by André Cuitas. Now, as a farmer and a soldier, I have no doubt you could fend for yourself on this desert island.
Oh, yes, I think so. I could build myself some sort of shelter. I don't know how I'd get fire, but I'd try.
Yes, and you could live off the land.
Oh, yes.
Could you accept the loneliness?
I think it'd be pretty terrible at first, but I'd try and discipline myself by having a routine.
Mm-hmm. Would you try to escape?
Well, if I could escape sensibly. I wouldn't try and swim several thousand miles, or anything like that.
Do you fancy yourself as a lone sailor?
Well, I haven't so far, but you never know when you desperately want to get somewhere else what you'd be.
Let's stick to music. What's your seventh record?
My seventh record is Rachmaninoff's Variation on a theme by Paganini.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost enchanting. It is enchanting.
The composer is soloist in an excerpt from Rachmaninoff's Variations on a Theme of Paganini. Now, your line.
Act 3 of Tristan and Isolde by Wagner.
Yes.
I love this. It inspires me greatly because the theme, as I see it, of Tristan and Isolde is the irresistible force striking the immovable object of Tristan's honor. He has, you know, of course, unwittingly drunk a love potion, and he's fallen in love with the queen. But his honor is such that the love potion is not all-powerful, but he is destroyed by those two things.
Yes.
And I think that that is a glory of sacrifice.
What is happening in the opera at this moment?
Tristan has been wounded. He hasn't defended himself. He's dying of a wound in a deserted castle on the coast of Brittany. He has a shepherd with him who's up on a rock, who's going to pipe a happy tune when the ship comes, as he thinks, for bringing the queen. And meanwhile, until the ship appears, he will play a melancholy tune.
Thank you.
an excerpt from Act 3 of Tristan and Isolde, conducted by George Schulte. Now, if you could choose just one of the 8 records you've played to us, which would it be?
I think the last one, Tristan and Isolde.
And one luxury?
I would like a cor anglais, which is the instrument that the shepherd plays.
Mm-hmm.
And I would climb on a rock on my desert island and play that tune till I saw Isolde coming to me in a ship.
And one book, assuming that you already have the Bible and Shakespeare on the island?
Richard Jefferies' Story of My Heart.
Oh, yes.
Because that is such a beautiful book, and it's so brave and lovely and beautiful. It's part of the soul of man.
All right. And thank you, Henry Williamson, for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Well, thank you for letting me come here and meet you all and hear them too.
Goodbye, everyone.